Hi, this is Mimi Sheraton, author of 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die, and you are listening to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm Carrie Diamond, editorial director of Cherry Bomb, the indie magazine about women and food. Thanks to everybody who's tuning in. I just got off a red-eye flight. I got off a red-eye flight very early this morning, literally so I could come back and do the show because I'm so excited about the guests on today's show. I landed at JFK at about 6 in the morning, and it was packed. I could not believe how many people were in the airport. And half of them were online at the Shake Shack in the airport. People just love that Shake Shack, man. And then I got home, saw my cat, and against my knowledge, I went to bed. And I slept for a few hours, and I must have hit my snooze button 8 million times. You guys all know the feeling. But I'm here now. The show's a little later than usual. We're usually on at 1 o'clock, but because the rest of our network is, I think, on vacation. We're technically closed today, so we're really happy that Dave, our engineer, came in. Thanks, Dave.
I do what I can.
And thank you for the iced coffee, which I need desperately. So if you guys hear the sound of clinking, yes, we're drinking in the studio, but it's just iced coffee.
But nothing. You won't hear the sound of a straw slurping. No way.
No, because I'm sort of anti-straw these days, as a lot of places are. Did you see Mario Batali announced no straws at any Mario Batali restaurants? You guys have heard me go off on my anti-plastic rant. I'm just trying to use less single-use plastic. I did a lot of beach cleanups this summer, and the three biggest things I picked up on the beach, balloons. Nobody really needs balloons. I hate to say that because kids love balloons, but you really don't need balloons. Straws, and the little plastic thing that connects the straw to the juice box. Those were all over the beach. So anyway, just be mindful of that, folks. And much bigger and more serious news, there's Houston and the devastating effects of the hurricane. And everybody's been asking us and each other, like, what can we do to help? How are the people in the restaurant industry down there doing? So I thought it would be a really good idea for us to actually talk to someone there. So we're really fortunate that we have on the line Rebecca Masson, the owner of Fluff Bakery Bar, right? Rebecca, are you there?
Fluff Bake Bar.
Thank you so much. I mean, you were really lucky in that Fluff was spared damage from the storm, but I can't imagine just the emotional toll, and you've got all your customers and friends and family you're worried about. So how are you doing?
I'm good. We opened up the shop on Tuesday, and that is exactly what I needed to do, personally and for my neighborhood where Fluff is. You know, sitting in the house for 3 days, I was surrounded by water. I have a bayou across the street from me. Luckily, my townhomes are about 3 feet above the street level, so the water just stayed even with the parking lot, thank goodness. But I couldn't go anywhere, so I was definitely, not that I would have wanted to, but, you know, I was stir crazy a little bit by Monday. Both
sure.
My dog and I were over it.
So what neighborhood is Fluff in?
Fluff is in Midtown. We are about literally 5 minutes from downtown. And as people have seen in the photos, our downtown was a swimming pool. Buffalo Bayou, which is the biggest bayou, not only went over, but it exceeded. I think the last I heard, we've exceeded 600-year flood plans with the amount of water that was dropped. So super lucky that the neighborhood where we're at in Midtown wasn't flooded. Our neighbors are all safe and dry. My staff is all safe and dry. Now the issue is just waiting for that one last bayou to go down so that we can really get back to getting our city back in order.
How about your friends in the industry? How are they doing?
I think from what I have heard, the only restaurant that I know of, Justin Yu, was reconcepting Ox Heart into Theodore Rex. And I actually had a reservation last Saturday night for friends and family, He flooded. I don't know the extent of how bad it is, but obviously Theodore Rex has pushed back their opening until further notice. It sounds like most of the restaurants that I know of that are close to me in Montrose and the Heights, they all did pretty well. Some of them have, you know, water damage to where they couldn't open, as in the case of Reef, which is owned by Brian Caswell. But his kitchen is fine, and it's insane. He's literally set up like a command station for this network of chefs in Houston that have gotten together, and they are literally feeding thousands of people a day in, you know, smaller shelters, first responders, policemen, firemen, and it's quite the network that's going on right now with that.
That's amazing. I know when we had spoken over email, I said we really wanted to know how we could help, and I thought it would make sense for us to talk to someone who's actually there. And do you have any thoughts on what our listeners can do?
So we've got some great organizations out there already raising money. Of course, Red Cross is here. There's J.J. Watt from the Texans. He has a fund going, and last I heard, he's shooting for $10 million. He started at $1 million. I think he's at 6 or 7. I haven't looked today. There's the mayor's fund that's happening. But for us, there's a lot of smaller places that maybe aren't getting the attention that they need, and they all need money and items as well. I don't think the mail's working yet. So I've had a handful of chefs reach out to me, and my advice to them was either find an organization and donate money. You know, they're like, can we come do an event? I'm like, stay home, do an event in your town. I know there's some chefs in Austin doing something. I saw on Instagram that Eli Culp from Fork Restaurant started the hashtag Chefs for Houston, and they have one dish on their menu that 100% of the proceeds will come down here. We're trying to find an organization that maybe affects or maybe helps out industry people. Because there's a lot of restaurants where their staffs have lost everything and they or lost wages. And so we're finding him an organization to donate that to. But he's already got restaurants in Seattle, Philadelphia, New York, Portland, L.A. using the hashtag, putting it on their menu and donating the proceeds from that dish. I know Matt McAllister in Dallas is going to start doing that. So that's a really huge thing. For me, I've picked out a handful of smaller charities that I think these people really need a little bit of help in the direction. The animals are very important to me. I do a lot of fundraising for different rescue groups. We had an overpopulation problem before this started, and now I can't even imagine what it's going to be once the water's all settled. So we have Houston Pet Set, which is this umbrella organization, and they hand out grants to some of the 3,000 rescue groups we have in Houston. They need obviously products for the animals, transportation for the animals, and so you can donate to them at HoustonPetSet.org. We have Rescued Pets Movement, which is actually an organization that I've used when I found a foster. I had a foster, and they transport animals to the Midwest, to the Northeast, places where there are lines of people wanting to adopt dogs, and they're RescuePetMovements.org. We also have the Texas Children's Hospital. They are looking for disaster relief for their children and their families. We have two school districts, the Clear Creek ISD and Fort Bend County ISD. 100% of donations are going to the families that were affected, and a lot of kids in their families in that area lost everything. And all the teachers, principals, they're all on staff and they're all being paid, and their jobs are to go out and help those students and their families get resettled and so that they can get back in school. Those are a handful that I think really need some help. I know that I appreciate everything that everyone has done. I've had so many chefs reach out to me. I have a network of friends all over the U.S., and the outpouring is just, it makes me cry a little bit. Like, it's amazing.
Well, we all want to help. I mean, that list is incredible, and we'll be sure to share that on our social media. But you really have built an incredible network. For anybody who looks at your Instagram, and your Instagram handle is Sugar Fairy, right?
Yeah.
That was a good one. You must have gotten that early. look at Sugar Fairy. You do so many guest chef things. You've got that awesome program you do on Saturdays.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that.
So we do the Saturday morning bake sale, and for a brief history of Fluff Bakeware, I started out only selling wholesale. I had, about 15 different wholesale accounts. I had a commissary, all that kind of stuff. And my sous chef and I would go do this Saturday morning pop-up once a month because, you know, making cookies kind of, I mean, it's fun, but after a while, you want to make something else. So we did it so that we could make pâte à choux and croissants and all that. And so once we opened the shop, we continued it. And learning is a big thing for me. And so my thought was, let me bring in a chef to do a bake sale. It doesn't matter if they're savory or they're sweet. We'll do 5 items. We'll make the dough. You make the insides. And, my staff gets to help do that. And they get to, get to see so many different things and so many different chefs. So it started once a month, and now it's literally every weekend. And I've had some chefs. I've had a couple chefs from New York. I was supposed to have Brandon Baltley last weekend, but we all decided it was best that he didn't come down to Houston.
Sure. I saw you had my friend Jason Neroni down there.
Yeah, Jason Neroni. He did a dinner. We have Stephen Kaluki from Cookshop coming for an entire weekend. He's doing an ice cream social and a bake sale in a couple weeks. We're super excited about that.
So it sounds like Fluff, you've really built Fluff into a hub down there.
Yeah, I like to think, I don't know. At first it all started because I couldn't travel anymore and see my friends. It was a little bit selfish, I'm not going to lie. But my neighborhood has just embraced us as a cool place to come to see people. They love the fact that we have a new chef in every weekend. They get really excited about the menus. It's just, I don't know. Tuesday reminded me why I built Fluff, because it was the first day open. I think we were the only ones on the block, and every person that walked through that door was just excited that we were open. And then they were like, oh my God, coffee. Oh my God, a warm cookie. Like, it was like, because some days I'm like, oh, I make cookies. But, Monday reminded me why I did it all. So.
And why everybody needs cookies. And I looked at the menu, and your cookies are pretty hilarious. You have sugar hooker Oreos, right?
Yes.
What is a sugar hooker Oreo?
Well, essentially it's an Oreo, but, I got a cease and desist order for Moon Pie. So I quickly changed all the names so I wouldn't get any more of those letters.
And no one had claimed Sugar Hooker Oreo already. I can't imagine.
That's my Chris Shepherd named me the Sugar Hooker about 7 years ago. So it's kind of stuck. So we just went with it. We rolled with it.
And you have your unicorn bait cookie. Is that what it's called?
Yes, it is. It's one of our best sellers. It's basically like a snickerdoodle base, but then we put sprinkles and birthday cake crumb inside of it, and then we roll it in sugar. And we tell all the little kids that's probably the best thing to leave out if you want to catch a unicorn.
Now, I know you said the Postal Service isn't up and running yet back in the city, yeah. But can you do mail order?
We're slowly getting into it. We do a handful here and there. There's a lot of, like, our cookies ship beautifully. I haven't mastered the art of shipping cakes. And our cupcakes are like a slice of cake in a cup. So they have a lid and they got all the layers and good stuff. But those we have to ship overnight, and it gets so expensive. And I feel bad telling people how much it costs.
I know. It's like when we ship our magazine to Australia, it costs $100 or something. And we try to talk people out of it. But if people want to help you directly in a few weeks or so, maybe they could order some cookies from your website.
Oh, absolutely. They just shoot an email to eatmoresweets@fluffbakebar.com, and we'll get them set up. Yeah.
And are you going to be okay? I mean, I would imagine it's going to be tough for the small businesses in Houston for a little while.
Yeah, that's a big concern on my head, especially with, I have a staff of 7. I want to make sure they all have enough work. So we'll just keep doing our best. We still do some wholesale, so that helps us. I don't do as much as I used to, but I have enough. I have enough to pay the rent every month. So we'll just keep an eyeball on it. For right now, we kind of reduced our hours. We usually are open late night, like 10 to 10 and 10 to midnight on the weekends, but we have a curfew now. And I don't know how long that will be in effect for. So we've reduced our hours, but people are starting to order cakes, which is amazing. That's another sign of getting back to normalcy, is they're going to celebrate those special occasions still. So we'll just keep our fingers crossed and our heads held high and do what we can.
Well, cake is a small, hopeful sign. And Rebecca, let's definitely stay in touch and let us know what we can do to help and what our listeners can do to help. But we're certainly
absolutely
cheering for you and the rest of the city.
We appreciate it. We appreciate all of everything that everybody's doing across the U.S. to give us a hand. So I will happily send on these, email you all these charities that I've chosen, and just, you know, whatever you can give, everything helps. So we appreciate everything.
Well, thank you so much, Rebecca. Take care, and we'll check back with you in a few weeks, okay?
Thank you, Carrie. Great to talk to you.
All right, you too. Take care.
Thanks.
All right. Well, we went right into our call with Rebecca because we had to talk to her as close to two as possible, but I need to thank our sponsors. This season of Radio Cherry Bomb is presented by Le Cordon Bleu. We actually have a Le Cordon Bleu graduate with us who we'll be talking to in a minute. Le Cordon Bleu, the legendary culinary school, has locations around the globe from Paris to London to Ottawa. The schools have a wide array of programs available, from 9-month classical culinary training programs all the way to bachelor and master's degrees. Visit cordonbleu.edu for more. And special thanks to our sponsor, Castor and Pollux, maker of the brand new purposeful pet food line, Pristine. A lot of Bomb Squad members are proud pet parents, so you'll want to know about this grain-free line made with responsibly sourced ingredients. Visit purposefulpetfood.com for more. All right, so speaking of that Le Cordon Bleu grad, she is sitting right across from me. Her name is Katie Quinn. She is a YouTube personality who goes under the name Katie Q, and she is the author of the Short Stack Editions cookbook on avocados. She is a new friend.
Yay.
We just met a few months ago in London because Katie was kind enough to email me when I mentioned that I was coming to London, and it is our great pleasure to welcome her to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thanks, Dave.
Dave's excited too.
Hi, Carrie.
Hi, Katie. How are you?
I'm so great. I'm so happy to be here.
Last time I saw you, we were kind of buzzed. We were sitting out in the sunshine. We were at Rochelle Canteen, Margot Henderson's fantastic spot over in Shoreditch.
It was one heck of an afternoon.
It was one heck of an afternoon. Yeah. So what did you email me again? I was trying to remember.
So I was listening to Radio Cherry Bomb when you mentioned that you were going to London, and I had just moved to London from a decade in New York, and I was like, oh, like a fellow New Yorker's coming to London, and I'm a huge fan. And so I was like, hey, like, maybe we can go to Le Cordon Bleu together, because you had mentioned maybe going to a class.
That was it. Exactly. And it's so funny. You were here in New York for 10 years and we managed not to meet. And you have to go all the way to London to meet somebody who was in your backyard for 10 years.
I kind of love that, though.
So tell us how you got started in the whole food world. I actually don't know a lot about your origin story.
Yeah. So I'm a video journalist by trade, and have always had an interest in food and kind of just like shoved it into any job I was ever in. So right out of college, I was a page at NBC. Did you ever watch 30 Rock with Tina Fey?
My mom was a page.
No, oh, no way.
At NBC.
Oh, that's
years
awesome.
Ago. Yes.
So was Regis Philbin.
He's not my father.
So I started as a page at the Peacock, and shortly thereafter was like kind of got a temp job there. And while I was twiddling my thumbs in this administrative temp job, I interned at Serious Eats, which is an amazing food website, because I just had like this massive passion for food that had just been discovered when I moved to New York from Ohio, right? So like I was like, this is the coolest thing ever. So I started interning for Serious Eats, which opened my eyes to careers in food and everything there is in food media. From there, though, I was hired at NBC as a video journalist, which was amazing, the path I wanted to go down. And shortly thereafter, I was working at the Today Show. And shortly thereafter, I realized, wait, maybe I can put my love for food in with this. So I started pitching food stories left and right, basically, and produced a series called Today's Cooking School on today.com, and just basically interviewed every chef who came on the show. So, you know, they have the best people, Daniel Boulud and Thomas Keller, Tom Clegg. Yeah, right? And this is actually key when I realized that, like, my interest in this might not be typical, because all my coworkers would get so excited because, like, Kim Kardashian's coming on the show. And I was like, what? But, like, Ina Garten's in the kitchen. Like, what are you talking about? Who cares? And then from there, I would shoot, produce, edit backstage videos with Today Show guests. Run back to my desk, edit it together, flip it for the new today.com, right? This is when TV shows just are realizing they need a web presence. So then I started interviewing some of the chefs, mostly the chefs, on camera, because chefs are often not comfortable looking into a camera and speaking. They need a human to talk to. So at this time, the video team at the Today Show was growing, because before I was the first and only hire. I was literally, they let like a 23-year-old run around backstage interviewing people. A couple years in, the team was growing, so I started interviewing people on camera. My teammates would record. And someone from Now This, which is a video news startup, saw one of those. I believe actually it was an interview I did with Tina Fey. And so then I kind of switched gears and was in a host role for a couple years. But again, was like, how can I wrap food into this? So I started the Now This food vertical and basically just pitched food stories all the time. I'm sure my editor was like, really, Katie?
There's more to the world, Katie.
Yeah, right. But I was like, well, not to me. Yeah. And then after the startup world, that's when I started my YouTube channel, and it just took off. And I never thought this was an actual career path, but it is, and it's awesome.
So do you, I have to ask the question everyone's wondering, do you actually make money off a YouTube channel?
Yes.
Explain how, for everybody out there who's like, I want a YouTube channel.
Yeah, right? Okay. So there are a few different ways. One is that you get paid per view. It's a very, very small amount, but the ads that run on YouTube, creators get money from that. It's a very, very small amount. The real money comes from branded content, right? And there are all these buzzwords, native advertising and all that kind of thing. But really, it makes this job a viable lifestyle that is actually pretty great, because I get to incorporate products that I use and that I like, and I incorporate them into video content I would likely be doing. Is that little girl dancing out there?
She's for those of you who are regular listeners, you know, we share a space with Roberta's Pizzeria, and the only thing that separates us from the diners is a piece of glass, and there's this little girl in a watermelon dress who has been spinning for about 5 minutes and is either going to barf or fall down. So we'll see which it is.
Yeah, it's actually pretty epic from my viewpoint. All I can see is her arm, like, just like every rotation I see her arm.
So when did you go to Le Cordon Bleu?
So, okay, yes. So the YouTube channel started and like took off, and I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, this was unexpected. This is now my job, like J-O-B. But I'm a journalist, and I, with a passion for food, I don't know what I'm talking about. And yet people are coming to me as though I'm a food expert, and not just my commenters. I was getting gigs, because really the YouTube channel is the center, and then I get paid projects off of that too, in addition to the native advertising that we were just talking about. So I was like, I have to give myself some credibility. So I packed up and moved to Paris. And
did you feel you were lacking credibility, Katie?
Also, I just wanted to live in Paris and go to Le Cordon Bleu. I mean, honestly, though, Carrie, when I started school there, I was like, you know what? Like, I got this. I cook all the time. Like, I kind of went in thinking, like, I'm just doing this because, you know, I want to. It'll be fun, kind of. It kicked my butt. I mean, really? And I am absolutely a better cook than I ever thought that I even could be, to be perfectly honest. And that's after every day coming home from class with you know, cuts and burns. And I was, like, pretty beat up. But I'm so glad I did it because... Yeah, I'm absolutely a better cook because of it.
You did a really cute video with one of your professors where he is demoing his knife skills. He's not even looking. He's got like his fingers curled back and did the most beautiful dice. Like they were just perfect little squares. It was unbelievable.
They are, all of the chefs are impressive. Yeah, it's really cool.
So what do you feel like you could do afterwards that you couldn't do?
I mean, the just doors.
Everything.
Yeah, honestly, doors were opened left and right.
Wow.
The cookbook was was a prime example of that because not only do you learn all of the things in culinary school that you would think, like knife skills and, you know, how to make a sauce and all that kind of stuff, but you really learn a recipe, what a good recipe is, what it takes, and just like repetition, doing things again and again, which is so key for recipe testing and being precise and taking notes. So I could have never written the Avocados Cookbook had I not had that experience.
Before we talk about avocados, can we talk about Paris?
Yes.
So you decided not to stay in Paris.
I decided not to stay in Paris. And it's really because the way that I saw culinary school, it was a thing to fill in for everything that was already going on here in New York. And I was so excited about everything that I was like, all right, I'm just going to go to Paris, have this experience. And I brought my audience along for the whole ride, right? I continued publishing my weekly YouTube videos while I was going through that experience. I was like, this is a fun side thing. And then I'm going to take it back to New York and keep going. Also, the person who is now my husband was here in New York. So hi, Connor.
There's that. There's I only ask because I love Paris so much.
I do too. I just recently visited from London too, and just like, I'm going to come back every week.
Anything fun you did there that you can mention?
In Paris, just on this recent trip?
Food stuff, yeah.
Oh man, everything. I'll tell you like one of my favorite things to do then, now, whenever I go is aperitif, right? Apéro, which is not something that is... It's not a cultural thing here in the States.
Oh, Aperol Spritz is having like the summer. I think it started right, last summer and now it's like the biggest thing.
Yeah, it's coming. I don't know if it's like hit the Midwest yet, but it is, right.
It's hit the coast.
You're right, it's hit the coast.
It hit the Hamptons.
But it's definitely, I mean, this is a thing that is about spending time with friends, loved ones, enjoying the moment, enjoying life. It's what the French do best. And so that just kind of that concept was really powerful to me. And then doing it, right? Hanging out with your friends, sitting along the canal and having some cheese and a glass of wine or whatever. That's the best.
So nice. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So your cookbook.
Yeah.
So how did you get, we love the Short Stack folks. Tell us what Short Stack is all about and how you got hooked up with them.
Yeah. So Short Stack Editions is this awesome publishing house. Their whole thing is one ingredient cookbooks. I mean, at this point, basically think of an ingredient and they probably have a cookbook dedicated to it. Strawberries, honey, eggplant, tahini. These are all just some of my favorite Short Stack Editions. I was a fan of Short Stack Editions long before I ever had the idea to write one about avocados. They're cute, for lack of a better word. They're smaller cookbooks. They have beautiful art design. The same artist does them all.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yes. And they're just awesome. They're all illustrations in the cookbook, not pictures. And they're, they're the kind of thing that you would just like have in your kitchen. It's like 20 to 25 recipes. And I realized that they didn't have an avocados cookbook. And I was like, that needs to change. I mean, I had an entire playlist on my YouTube channel dedicated to avocados. And I was like, how do they not have this cookbook yet?
Another thing I love about Short Stacks is they find some of my favorite people to do cookbooks.
Oh, fun.
You, they've got you, Susan Spungen,
yes,
did a cookbook. Dawn Perry has a new one. Adina Sussman did the tahini cookbook.
It's so good. I have to shout out to Adina because her recipes are amazing. Her tahini granola is like, ooh, has like changed my morning routine.
They have the cherries one that Stacey Adamondo did.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's such a great collection.
It really, really is. And, you know, I'm no expert about the publishing industry at all, but they do things differently than a typical, you know, Random House or whatever, like the big publishing houses. And my understanding is that it's a bit nicer as the author to work with them. I don't know because I can't speak from the other point of view, but I can say that they were so wonderful to work with. Nick and Caitlin are pros and they're just so wonderful and so passionate. And I just can't say enough great things about them all.
Do they have any recipe testing rules?
Rules? No, but you know, in the editing process, they're really great at helping the authors comb through and make sure that they put together a coherent cookbook and a coherent recipe. And they definitely go through with the red pen and green pen if we want to take inspiration from Dear Judith.
Judith Jones.
Yeah.
Who edited everything with her. Was it a green pencil or a green pen?
Oh, I don't know. Remember. It was a green writing utensil of some kind. But yeah, no. So they definitely helped in the edit process with a very, very close eye.
And the books are fantastic. You can go to shortstackeditions.com and check them out. And they're affordable. They're,
oh,
you know,
yeah,
they're, I don't want to say a pam, they're not a pamphlet, but they're like, they're,
yeah,
booklets.
They're booklets.
Yes,
and I mean,
exactly,
the way I think about it is they're the kind of thing that, well, first of all, they're perfect gifts, but it's not overwhelming. And it's like, do you know someone who loves avocados or any of these other ingredients you mentioned? Like, it's just like, it's the perfect thing to have in your kitchen, to have on hand or to give as a gift.
So why avocados?
Okay.
Why a girl from Ohio decides to do an avocado book?
That is a great question. So to say I love avocados is like, no, duh, right? Everyone does. So the motivation for this, and really when I fell in love with avocados and with their versatility, really, is when I started doing videos for my YouTube channel about avocados, like recipes with avocados. And my viewers, who are all amazing, I have such an awesome community of people, and they're very international, right? So I think my third largest audience is from the Philippines, like this random, it's like, that's the beauty of the internet, right? So like Brazil is another huge one for my channel. So what happened was I would do these avocados videos and I would get a ton of comments from my viewers all around the world saying, oh, in Colombia, we do it like this. In Malaysia, we do it like this. In the Philippines, like, you should try this way. I bet you would love it. And so I started trying them and was like, just my mind was opened up. It's like, of course, condensed milk and avocados and bananas are like a beautiful thing, but I just never would have thought of it. And it opened my mind to all of the different ways that avocados can be prepared, not just on avocado toast.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Once you learn how to do it in sweet preparations, it's really incredible.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it's amazing in drinks. Like, I have an avocado margarita recipe. It's great in sauces and soups and really just about any way you can imagine.
We ran a picture of yours, the black sesame cupcakes,
yeah,
with the avocado cream cheese frosting. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, that is such a winner, I have to say. And I was making a cream cheese frosting and had a really ripe avocado on my counter. And I'm like, this could be kind of fun. Let's try it. I threw it in, and yeah, it's delicious. And
oh, that's brilliant. It's like when you have a banana that's like overly ripe, and you're like, I guess I better make some banana bread.
Exactly.
Pronto. Yeah. Do you spend much time on the West Coast ever?
Yeah, I go out there quite a bit, actually.
It blows my mind when I go out there to like the Santa Monica Farmers Market or the San Francisco Farmers Market at the Ferry Building. And they have different types of avocados.
Yeah. Yeah. When I was researching for the Avocados Cookbook, I went out and the California Avocado Commission took me on this tour to, you know, educate me on all things avocados. And yeah, I learned so much about it and all the different varieties. It's really incredible.
A bacon avocado. did you try that one?
Yeah, yeah.
It's really crazy. I guess I was in Palm Springs earlier this year and had to buy like three different kinds of avocados and bring them back and do a little taste test, and some are sweeter. Mm-hmm.
Some are like more watery. Mm-hmm. And that actually brings up a really good point. When I set to write this cookbook, I was like, this is a fruit, because it is a fruit, everyone. This is a fruit that has so many different varieties. It's like, how can I write a cookbook that will fit with all of these? So what I say at the top of the cookbook is that Hass avocados are by far the most popular avocado at your grocery store. 99.9% sure that is the kind of avocado that they are selling you. So these recipes are meant to be used with Hass avocados, although they certainly can be exchanged. And actually, I have one recipe that is with a variety specific to Hawaii, because I was in Hawaii and picked one up, and they're not quite as buttery tasting, but still really delicious. And the truth is, you could swap them out fairly interchangeably. But Hass is definitely the go-to.
All right. So two last questions. What are you, what's your next big project?
What's my next big project? So the cool thing about moving to London is that it's opened up the doors in terms of travel food content, because it's so accessible to travel anywhere in the European area from London. I'm currently working on a project with the Conte Cheese Association.
Ooh,
are you familiar with Conte?
Cheese, yes.
I love Conte. And so
I don't pronounce it like that, but I love it.
the French have educated me, so I can be sure on that. But basically doing a series for them that's all about like the tradition behind Conte and like the community that's there and why it's so special. So those are my favorite kind of projects, integrating travel, community, connection, and food, right? And food is at the center of all of those other descriptors, I think. So really excited about all of the travel stuff. I'm also partnering with Wales and going up there and doing some things. So that is what's on the horizon.
That's very exciting. I'm part Welsh.
No way.
I don't know anything about Wales.
Oh, well,
to my embarrassment.
I'll send you my videos.
Absolutely.
When
I will watch it very happily. How are all our buddies over in London?
Oh, Carrie.
The Hemsleys.
Yes. They are all so good. And I'm so glad you brought this up.
Polka Pants, all our friends.
Yeah, Maxine Thompson of Polka Pants, Melissa Hemsley, Melissa and Jasmine, both the Hemsley sisters, are amazing. So, you know, New York and London are kind of sister cities, right? And so when I moved to London from New York, I had a lot of New York friends saying, oh, you're like, you have to meet my buddy so-and-so over there. And one of the first people that a mutual friend connected me with was Melissa Hemsley, who we both know and love. And we both know she's wonderful. She has been so generous with her time and her connections. She's such a natural connector. And I have to say that she and others like her, but really Melissa's just been incredible. It has made the transition from New York to London so much smoother, because it's like, Katie, meet this person you need to meet, and like over email and in person. And yes. So to answer your question, she's great. And everyone in that very welcoming community, is they're all fantastic.
Oh, I'm happy to hear it. We are totally coming there next year to do a
Jubilee.
Yeah.
Oh,
100%.
I will be there too then.
You, me and Melissa have to get on chat or something and figure out some dates and
a
place.
Dude.
I don't know. I have a few places in mind, but we'll have to talk it through.
Count me in.
So, Katie, so good to see you.
So good to see you, Gary.
Lucky me, I got to meet you this year and see you in two countries.
Lucky me. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, thanks. Everybody, be sure to check out Katie's YouTube channel.
Q Katie. The letter Q, K-A-T-I-E.
And go to shortstackeditions.com and be sure to buy her avocado cookbook. And if you make anything, tag us. We would love to see what you make from it. All right. We will be right back with Ashley Stanley from Love and Spoonfuls after this message.
Le Cordon Bleu, the renowned culinary school, was founded in Paris 122 years ago by a young journalist named Mademoiselle d'Estelle. In 1895, she launched the first weekly culinary magazine called La Cuisinière Le Cordon Bleu. She invited subscribers to take part in free cooking lessons with the chefs featured in her magazine, and from there, the school was born. In the years since, the Cordon Bleu's world-class instructors have taught French classical culinary techniques to everyone from home enthusiasts to food world legends. If you've dreamt of attending culinary school, maybe it's time to quit that boring corporate job and check out one of Le Cordon Bleu's 35 locations around the world. Or add a short workshop or weekend program at one of its schools to your next vacation. Visit cordonbleu.edu for course descriptions, dates, and online registration. It's all possible at Le Cordon Bleu.
Are you a devoted pet parent? We know from your Instagram feeds that many of you in the Bomb Squad have beloved cats and dogs, and that their well-being means everything to you. Be sure to check out New Pristine, the only complete line of pet food made with responsibly sourced ingredients from Castor and Pollux, maker of America's number one organic pet food. Pristine is setting a new standard with recipes featuring grass-fed beef and wild-caught salmon. We love that Castor and Pollux cares as much about our pets as we do.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Radio Cherry Bomb. As mentioned and promised, we are here with Ashley Stanley, the founder of Love and Spoonfuls, an organization that has rescued more than, ready, 7 million pounds of food and distributed it to Boston area homeless shelters, food pantries, and soup kitchens. We are so pleased to welcome Ashley to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thanks for having me.
And I just found out to welcome you to Brooklyn.
Oh, thanks.
She's never been to Brooklyn before.
I haven't.
So
finally made it across.
Lucky you.
Yeah, lucky me.
Brooklyn and Radio Cherry Bomb. So this is our seats. Katie's taking videos, or Katie's going to show you the video.
I will.
Like sitting, Ashley and I are sitting in this really weird position. So
I'm having a super Brooklyn experience on like a Baja like blanket on a
my
super laid back chair.
Yeah, my chair is pretty busted ass here. So I think we need to, I don't know, kickstart and get some new chairs or something.
Donations welcome.
Exactly.
That's my line.
No,
Dave.
You have to donate to Houston right now. That's the more important thing. We can. I can sit on a broken chair for a few more weeks. But anyway, Ashley, funny, sort of like the same way I met Katie, someone from your organization had emailed.
We're big fans of Cherry Bomb in
Boston. And then I was going to Boston because I had just really never spent enough time there. And there were so many incredible women in the Boston food scene, similar to London, like we were just talking about. And I was like, somebody had emailed me. I was like, let me find that email. And because I'm so bad at email, I don't read half my emails, not by choice, but then I don't delete any of my emails. So I was like, let me find them. And I went back and found this email that was like 6 months old or something and reached out to you guys. And
we're so glad you did. We love Cherry Bomb. And I can relate, actually, who you spoke to, Katie, who is our communications director. She once wrote me an email that said, it was the last line. She said, Ashley, if you're still reading this email, I will buy you a cheeseburger. So now I read all my emails hoping that somebody's going to buy me a cheeseburger.
That's pretty funny. Somebody's going to bury that in their next email to you. So tell us how you started Love and Spoonfuls.
Totally by accident. My background is not in food. It's not in nonprofit. It's not in social service. My history with food has always been important to me, central to me, something that's always been available and consistent in my life. And not that I took that for granted, but I was actually the opposite. I was always very aware that that was consistently available. And I think, you know, I was turning 30. I was working in fashion, not that you could tell from today, but it was just something that everything had changed, right? Social media, reality TV, there was some creativity missing. There was some communication between, you know, designer, client, all that. Things were just getting fuzzy. And I was sort of starting to think, what's my next move? I want a career change. I want to do something different. And I really did not have any ideas whatsoever. I had like my resume like on monster.com. I don't even know if that's still a thing, but like looking just what am I interested in? What do I want to do? And I literally was in a restaurant, and I think it was November-ish of 2009. And, you know, the holiday season starts and we start getting inundated with all of the charity asks. There's not enough. There's not enough food. There's not enough clothing. There's not enough toys. There's not enough money, shelter, what have you. And so the message is there's not enough. And it's the responsibility of you, general public, to come up with a solution with your dollars and create enough. And so I'm sitting in this restaurant at this table, and it was only two of us, and there's so much food on the table. And, you know, that's either a comment on portion size or a comment on the way I order, and probably somewhere in between. But I just, I randomly started thinking there's so much here. Not only is there enough, but there's more than enough. And I can't be the only table in the only restaurant in the only town having this experience. And it, Spoonfuls has become a natural extension of that idea that perhaps it's not supply that's the problem, it's distribution. That's also the problem, but also the solution.
So explain what that means.
So we talk a lot about hunger in this country being a problem of supply. There's not enough. And in fact, there is enough. There is enough food produced in this country. There's enough food produced in the world to feed our entire population 10 times over. The issue is not getting to people. How do we do that efficiently? How do we do that safely? How do we do that responsibly and really strategically? And so that, again, was sort of the impetus for how we have built Spoonfuls in our model.
So it's amazing that you seized on that, you know, because so many people are like, how do I help? And you came up with this very practical solution.
You know, I grew up in Wellesley, Massachusetts. So there were things that were available, and I, again, food, I'm Jewish. So food is at the center of everything all the time. It's the center of celebration, joy, family, friends, all of that. And so I've always had this thought that food is sort of the center of the human experience, wherever we are and whoever we are. My family had a global foundation. And so I was privy to seeing how philanthropy works on a large scale. And my question or the issue I sort of always struggled with was, you know, is throwing money at a problem going to grow the solution or the sort of entity that creates the solution, or is it going to solve the problem and eliminate the need for the solution? That's just how my brain works. And here it really was, okay, well, why don't we just try something different?
And you were thinking about food waste before a lot of people. I mean, now it's a big issue in all these organizations like Ugly Fruit and Veg, you know, doing things to rescue produce from just being tossed out. I don't know if they're talking about it in Europe much.
Well, yeah, actually, the UK actually has a huge initiative. They do something called Feeding the 5,000, mm-hmm. and they've been real leaders there for a long time. For me, you know, both my parents are from New York. I lived here across the river for a long time. My fiance is from Long Island. So New York is everywhere, right? But so we grew up going to New York and staying in hotels. And, you know, whenever we would go out to eat, we just grew up taking doggy bags and leaving them on the side of trash cans. I thought everybody did this. And it really was that somebody would come and get the bag, and perhaps that would be their lunch, dinner, all they had to eat that day. It really didn't connect for me until I was, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. My dad and I had gone to the Carnegie Deli, as we often did. And I don't know anybody who can finish their meal there. And we certainly couldn't. And we were walking down 7th Avenue. And I had, you know, left half of my pastrami sandwich, and I happened to turn back And I saw somebody pick up that bag and start to eat it. And it was that moment that it clicked. That's why we did that.
How old were you?
7-ish, 8-ish, I think.
So explain to us exactly how Love and Spoonfuls works. When I was there, you had all these trucks outside.
We do have trucks. We're essentially a trucking company with a purpose. We have 7 trucks in our fleet. We have 6 geographical routes. So all of our routes are geographically focused, and they are as systemized as possible, right? Food rescue at best is random. Don't know what you're going to get, when you're going to get it, how much people are using, what have you. But in order to really sort of frame this work and make it, as sad as that sounds, make it valuable for the vendor, whether it's a supermarket or a farm or a wholesaler, what have you, you really have to come at it and say, we are another service provider. We are a service provider here to, you know, provide an option for you to safely and responsibly, you know, deal with your overage, deal with your excess. So we've got trucks that spend the morning picking up. And again, they're on a set system and they're on a set schedule. So we kind of, you know, call ourselves the cable guys, but better looking a little bit, that will show up within the window. And we're there. We have a digital inventory system. Our drivers are ServSafe certified. They're trained. We don't utilize volunteers. And it's really for the purpose of dealing with perishable food. We deal with healthy food, right? So everything we're picking up is fresh produce, lean proteins, dairy, whole grains, things like that.
So you mentioned farmers, retailers. Mm-hmm. Who are some of your specific partners?
Whole Foods is a huge partner of ours. They always have been. You know, certainly as a national company, they're everywhere. And there was a local food chain that had, you know, been going out, and sort of Whole Foods had taken over all of their locations. And as they were on that rollout, they sort of brought Love and Spoonfuls on with that rollout as well. So we really got to understand what they needed as a retailer, and sort of what they were doing with their buying, and, you know, different demographics in different areas. Trader Joe's is another one. Locally, you know, Massachusetts has such a rich agricultural community that there's a lot of local growers, and then a lot of local grocers. Roach Brothers is one. That's a fantastic company. Mm-hmm. And they are all around the Metro West and even downtown Boston a little bit.
So you have helped feed a lot of people. I mean, 7 million tons, right?
7 million pounds.
Pounds.
And actually, if you...
That's less than 7 million tons. But it's still a heck of a lot of food.
You know, it's funny. It's when you show up and you offer a solution, people often don't know what the problem is until they have something to address it. Mm-hmm. And so I think this was something that we were able to do and sort of create a best practice around this. That's 7 million pounds of food, interestingly enough. We're trying to look at this from a health perspective, right? Because part of what exists in the low-income community and the folks who are food insecure is this hunger and obesity paradox. How does that happen? How, you know, the cheapest food that's available is often the worst for you. So then you have these tentacles of mm-hmm. hunger, right? And health and all of that. We were able to figure out that 7 million pounds of food was equal to over 7 billion calories that were rescued and saved.
Wow.
And so I think now when we talk about how do we get healthy calories into these communities, especially for kids and seniors, which is our two largest growing demographics of people in this country, and the ones who need the most attention and the most strategic sort of feeding solutions, how do we do that? So we rescue about 60,000 pounds of food each week between those routes, feed over 30,000 people each week. We really try and look at our partners strategically. And I think the chef that you had on from Houston had been talking about wanting to focus on some of the organizations or efforts that didn't get a lot of airtime. And I think that's something that we look for as well when we're engaging, you know, newer partners and newer beneficiaries, folks who don't always have the resources to get a spot on the news or mm-hmm. you know, maybe it's a local pastor who's running the soup kitchen, something like that. So we really want to go in and say who needs the most help and how can we address that.
So how can our listeners help Love and Spoonfuls?
Well, you can help 11 Spoonfuls again. I think the focus of this show is Houston and asking people to direct their money where there's most immediate need. So certainly there is important. But along the same lines of distribution, and when there's an issue, that's in the case of a natural disaster. Here, 11 Spoonfuls, money makes things work. So certainly there are ways to donate online at our website, 11spoonfulsinc.org. The other ways to do it are really sort of to pay attention to your own habits as consumers, right? Like, how are we valuing food? How are we looking at food as something that is not just biologically necessary, but something that's environmentally practical? You know, food waste is one of the biggest drivers of climate change. Between all the resources that go into producing food, that's wasted. And then what happens when that food, you know, is rotting in a landfill? So let's figure out how we can reframe that. Pay attention to what we're buying, how we're using it. I love the idea of putting the avocado in the cream cheese or the, and whatever that avocado banana thing, I'm into it. You know, taking food and getting really creative with it. How do we really put the value back into food? Because when you value food, you value people. And then that sort of turns into how do we move forward with all of our resources intact?
Well, you're such an inspiration. And honestly, both of you, you know, our current issue has Martha Stewart on the cover. And I did the interview and she said, I was talking to her at a time when a lot of my friends had lost their media jobs. There were all these media layoffs. And I said, God, what advice do you have for people right now? And she said, find the void. She said, there is always a void. It doesn't matter what's going on. And even in a world with all this change and you've got Uber and this and that, and there are voids, and you two have both filled voids of sorts. So it's for anyone out there who's listening, you know, if you have an idea or a passion, I think, you know, Katie and Ashley are proof that sometimes you just need to go for it.
Agreed.
And you can make a lot happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Wise words of Martha Stewart, too. Can't go wrong with that.
Exactly. Well, thank you both.
Thanks.
For stopping
thank
by.
You.
You came all the way down from Boston.
Thank Hope you for being at Roberta's. That didn't suck.
That's true. This is good for your first
this
visit
not
to,
bad.
To Brooklyn. Absolutely. So thank you to all of you for listening. Thank you, as always, to our engineer, Dave Tadashore, and much love to Castor and Pollux for making this season of Radio Cherry Bomb possible. If you're a devoted pet parent, be sure to check out Pristine, the only complete line of pet food made with responsibly sourced ingredients. And thank you to Le Cordon Bleu, or I should say, oh, I'm going to make Katie pronounce it.
Le Cordon Bleu.
There we go, just like that. Be sure to visit cordonbleu.edu for information about this legendary culinary school. And you can go to Cue Katie on YouTube to see some of her fun videos, including that one of her instructor and his unbelievable knife skills.
Crazy awesome knife skills.
Absolutely. Don't forget, I know we talked about cookbooks. Cherry Bomb has its own cookbook coming out, 10-10, mark
Ooh,
it down.
Yeah.
You can pre-order the Cherry Bomb cookbook on Amazon, IndieBound, Barnes & Noble's, or from your favorite indie bookstore. We also have Cherry Bomb Jubilee San Francisco tickets on sale right now. We haven't announced the lineup yet, and I'm really excited for everybody. We'll be announcing it next week, and you will not believe who's speaking at Jubilee this year. That is taking place October 14th in San Francisco. You can visit our brand new website, cherrybomb.com. We designed it ourselves.
Nice. Awesome.
Thank you very much. On Squarespace, it was very exciting. So go check that out. All right, everybody. Summer's almost over.
Oh,
happy Labor Day weekend.
September is my summer, so I'm headed to Nantucket in like a week.
Oh,
so
Nantucket is nice in September.
Yeah.
The water's a little warmer.
Mm-hmm. It's a little less crowded, and it's just, yeah, it's going to be great.
Lucky Ashley. Yeah. Well-deserved Ashley.
We're all jealous, Ashley.
Well, thank you for listening, everybody. You're the bomb.
I'm Sogul Zulgadri, a first-generation Vietnamese-Iranian-American and owner of Sogi's Honey Bake Shop, a bespoke cookie company based in Brooklyn. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and the Heritage Radio Network. To subscribe or learn more about the magazine, visit cherrybomb.com. You know who I think is the bomb? Betsy Thorlefson. She owns Nine Cakes, a boutique cake studio. Betsy is a big-hearted female business owner with an incredible and talented team behind her. She's always supported me and other female entrepreneurs in the industry. I'd be entirely lost without her. Love and I can't.